Hi, I'm Tom Rogers, Vice President of the Qigong Institute. This is the fifth in the Qigong Institute series of podcasts about Qigong. The Qigong Institute is a 501c3 nonprofit organization dedicated to Qigong research and education and to educating the public on the immediate and long-term benefits of Qigong. All officers and directors are volunteers, and there's no paid staff. This podcast is Medical Qigong in the 21st Century by Dr. Ted Sibbick. This program is from a presentation at the Holistica Expo, October 2003, and it outlines how ancient Chinese medical practices, specifically medical Qigong, can be blended with Western medicine to provide healing from Western medical diagnoses previously thought uncorrectable. This will be of special interest to people with chronic illness where Western medical treatment is ineffective, non-existent, or it simply gives up. Medical Qigong is the alternative that looks at the body energetically. Dr. Sibbick finishes with a very simple yet powerful Qigong practice.
Welcome to the Medical Qigong in the 21st Century. You will be listening to Dr. Ted Sibbick. Dr. Sibbick is a doctor of naturopathy and one of only a few doctors of medical Qigong in the United States and Canada. His self-healing journey from a child who was not supposed to live past the age of 10 to the healer that he is today is a testament to what natural healing methods and medical Qigong can do.
A little bit about me so you know who this guy is speaking. I'm a doctor of naturopathy as well as a doctor of medical Qigong, which there is only right now in North America four doctors of medical Qigong in North America outside of China. So, what that basically means is medical Qigong is one of the branches of Chinese medicine. There are four basic branches of Chinese medicine that you may have already had exposure to, and probably the most famous is acupuncture, okay? And that involves a lot of different techniques, not just the needling, but moxibustion as well as magnetic therapy, and all those things are actually included within acupuncture. And then we have bodywork therapy. Much of what is being taught today in massage schools comes out of a lot of the techniques that came from China called Tuina and Anmo. Tuina is basically a lot of therapeutic hand positions all over the back and the shoulders, and they use different postures of the hands. They even use a little bit of their forearms to do different kinds of massage. And Anmo is actually visceral massage. In other words, they massage the internal organs like many osteopaths do. And then another very common thing that you're hearing more and more about is Chinese herbology. Okay, and where a lot of people are starting to hear about this is research in cancer. Because they've found that the compounds that come exclusively from Chinese herbals or medicinals, they're not just herbals. The compounds that they use in combination with each other basically do have abilities to compound, join together, and to do apoptosis. In other words, break apart and kill cancer cells. And they're actually doing this in my hometown in Pittsburgh right now. There is $10 million set aside at the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center to study seven herbals that they know right now in preliminary results have a definite effect on cancer. So you're going to be hearing a lot more about that. There's also been isolation of several compounds from Chinese herbals to fight breast cancer and prostate cancer. So Chinese herbals is something that you're going to be hearing a lot more about. True Chinese herbalism, though, involves much more than just taking plants. They use insects, they use dirt, they use a whole array of things from the earth. Many times they use rocks to get certain components of different chlorides or whatever they need. So it's very inclusive of whatever is on the earth they will use in Chinese herbal products. That is going to get more common as we go through and start to do more research. But I think the most esoteric is what I'm a doctor of, and that is medical Qigong. Although Its basis goes back almost 7,000 years. We can trace this back to actual scrolls written by Taoist priests who are actually using these structured exercises as a means of not only bringing health and vitality to the body, but at that particular time they were interested in longevity. That part hasn't changed much, has it? We're still interested in longevity. And in fact, there's medical doctors directing their entire focus to longevity because we do have an aging population. So the Qigong exercises then later become to sprout out, and they started to actually have a medical connotation. They became very specialized for special conditions. And then there was another track that kind of took off, was just like what everybody did, general exercise, so to speak, for just overall health maintenance that people would actually learn. Kind of like the calisthenics that you learn in gym class. Everybody, if I said, let's go up and do jumping jacks and push-ups, would know those things. However, in medical Qigong or in Qigong, they would have certain breathing and movement exercises that would be basis. So there was two tracks. There was one on the medical end, and then there was one on the general health end. The medical Qigong, as it's practiced in China right now, is used in specific hospitals dedicated for very chronic, severe, and terminal cases. For instance, the Sichuan Hospital where I studied at specifically works with cancers. And they have a lot of different types of Qigong exercises specifically tailored to the kind of cancer that you have. So somebody that had squamous cell cancer, and somebody who had breast cancer, and somebody who had prostate cancer would be doing three different kinds of exercises, even though they would be in the same hospital. The other interesting thing about how they approach cancer, and incidentally, with cancer, they always combine it with the herbals. Cancer is one of those big scary words that are out there. In fact, cancer can scare the pants out of just about everybody I know these days. But they use a conglomeration of Chinese herbals and medical Qigong to treat it in China right now. And they're having some enormous success rates, a lot better than, in some cases, a lot of the chemo and radiation long-term. Survival rates long-term, 10, 15 years after the fact, not just survival rates. I think that's an important difference. But what is interesting is when somebody develops cancer in China, they remove you from the very environment that could be causing you stress. And they place you within the hospital system, and you work with people like yourselves. For instance, say you had 10 people that had breast cancer. They would all become like a support group, and they would all be doing their medical Qigong exercises together, and it would all be positive reinforcement. There would be absolutely no negativity whatsoever done or said or alluded to within that environment. So nobody would be saying, oh, that stuff doesn't work. What are you doing that for? None of that negativity is brought forth, which I think is an important component, because the state of mind of a patient is ultra important in order to fight something as devastating as cancer. And then they would bound together the prostate cancer people and so forth. They also use color therapy. Certain colors are attached to Chinese medicine and their particular organs that we try to strengthen. So for instance, say you had some type of liver cancer, okay, which usually when you have liver cancer, it's pretty serious, it's pretty deadly. The liver serves as a filtration system in the body, and once that filtration system starts to break down, then in fact your filtration system now is allowing pathogens to go throughout the bloodstream. Therefore, the chances of metastasizing are far greater, and the lymphatic system becoming compromised. So what they would do is they would use color therapy as an adjunct to the medical Qigong prescriptions that would be given by the medical Qigong doctor. They would be done in isolation with only a positive support group, and they may be out of circulation, so to speak, for as long as 3 to 4 months doing nothing but therapy. When in the U.S. healthcare system can you see somebody being removed from their workplace to get healthy and saying, you know what, you just concentrate on you. You go and get better, and we'll see you in 3 months, and we'll guarantee your job's here. When would that ever happen? When would that ever happen? Most of the people who come to me for cancer can't even get off a day of work to go get their test run, and they're dragging their behinds up, and they're incredibly tired and fatigued. Huge difference in mentality. And let me tell you why I love Chinese medicine so much. A little about my history. I don't believe that they ever expected me to live. And I'll give you a perfect example. Back in 1962, I was diagnosed as the worst asthma case in North America. In 1964, because of a 5-day asthma attack, I clinically died and was brought back by an experimental drug. It was also written up in JAMA because of this. And that experimental drug called Karari is being used today. That was the first one to ever use that. Karari is a paralysis drug. What they did is, because after 5 days of labored and intensive breathing, when basically you are going through oxygen deprivation, your whole body starts to turn blue. Your lips turn blue, your hands turn blue. There's not enough oxygen circulating through the system. They knew that if they didn't do something soon, that my heart was going to give out. So what they did is they injected a drug, actually a plant, that was used by natives to actually paralyze game on the end of spears or arrows. And they injected that into my body, and they paralyzed everything, including my heart. So everything in my body was completely paralyzed and shut down. They thought they gave me enough just for a couple hours. I was paralyzed for 3 days. And at that point in time, because of the overdose of the drug and because of the severity of the asthma attack of 5 days, I went to the other side. But it was real interesting when I came back, because I was very popular. The doctors wanted to know exactly what I had experienced, what I had seen. And I can remember intense interrogation by physicians, psychiatrists, over and over again. They would not let me leave the hospital. And my parents were subjugated to the same thing. What did he tell you? What did he say? What's going on the other side? That's the topic of my book, which will be coming out in 2003. But this obviously put a thought into my mind that, you know what? Not too many people here on this earth right now have the ability to help myself. I have to help myself. So, with the help of my parents, I became a voracious reader, researcher. And the only thing I ever wanted to do in my life was train martial arts. So at the age of 5, I started training martial arts. And I'll never forget when I first walked in and signed up for martial arts lessons. This was judo, by the way, which was on a mat and was quite dusty, which, you know, is not good for asthmatics. And I started to get an asthma attack. And the instructor freaked. He'd never seen anybody turn blue before on the mat. Not from being choked, but just from standing. And, panicked. Come over to my parents, what's going on? We got to get them to the hospital, da, 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 da. And the next thing you know, I showed up again at his door, and he says, wait a minute. He says, I'm not going down that road again. But I begged and I pleaded and so forth. He says, you don't need to know judo. You need to know how to breathe. So at that point, he started teaching me Zen meditation. So I started Zen at the age of like 5 or 6. And so I started to learn to meditate. And meditation was the only thing that saved me throughout my asthma attacks. Because when you go through a day-long asthma attack, And for those of you who don't have asthma, asthma is kind of like you duct taping one nostril shut and duct taping your mouth shut. And now let's go for a 2-mile run. And that's what it feels like. It feels like you're going to die. It feels like things inside of you are going to rupture. It feels like you're going to shut down. And you don't know what's happening internally to you at all. All you know is that your body is trembling inside. The only thing that would quiet me down was meditation. And the meditation came from Eastern medicine. Therefore, it taught me that the Western medicine had nothing to offer me, but the Eastern medicine did. Hence my interest in Chinese medicine. Medical Qigong is about breathing. It is about visualization. It is about empowerment. It is about the ability for you to take control of what we once thought was very autonomic functions of the body, such as respiration, heart rate, and as they will soon find out, the immune system. So, of all the modalities, medical Qigong makes the most sense to me as the one that I should specialize in, and that's what I did, because it's the one that helped me survive. So what am I doing now? I'm working with people that are chronic, severe, that Western medicine cannot figure out. Part of my training is also as a naturopathic doctor, using natural methods of healing, rest, exercise, breathing, good nutrition, stress management, if you will. But I tend to kind of sway over to the Chinese medicine side because there's so much more that I can work with. And I'll give you a perfect example of one of my cases. There was a gentleman who was 36 years of age, construction worker. And basically he was working on a roof, putting in insulation. Something happened. He fell through the roof, fell one story, landed on a concrete paved portion of the basement that was wet, that also had electric current going through it, and became electrocuted. This man, after they repaired his torn rotator cuff, had intense pain, enormous pain radiating out through his body for 10 years. Nobody could find the origin of his pain. They did all kinds of MRIs, CAT scans. They did nerve conduction tests. And after they exhausted every feasible test possible, they sent him to a psychiatrist because they thought it was in his head. Once the psychiatrist evaluated him and said, this guy's in pain, they sent him back to the medical doctor. That's where he went, back and forth, for 10 years. How this man had to survive is in his freezer, he would take a 5-pound block of ice, cut it in half, lay down, put the blocks of ice on his face because there was such heat coming off of this man and there was so much pain that that's how he would go to sleep every night. And he did that for years. How he had the courage to survive is amazing to me, but it's a testament to the will and the drive of somebody. He knew there was an answer, but he didn't know where to go. Finally, he ended up at my doorstep. And when I first examined this particular individual, I did his pulses, I did his tongue, and all those different kinds of things. I noticed there was something enormously wrong with the flow of energy within his body. And make no mistake, everything in Chinese medicine is about energetics. It is about energy flow systems within the body, and they must flow in certain directions. If they do not flow in certain directions, you're in for trouble. And that's exactly what happened to this individual. Upon electrocution, what had happened is a term called his microcosmic orbit became reversed. His polarities became reversed in his body. And once I understood that, then I was able to actually take, and through medical Qigong therapy, reverse his polarity back to normal. Once he became normal in the microcosmic orbit flow, and in fact the channel started to operate at the correct polarity again, no pain. None. Zero. Zilch. The guy is in school again. He's back in college. He's leading a normal life. He's got a girlfriend. Everything is in order. I'll give you another perfect example of where medical qigong work. Have you ever heard of RSD? Many people with RSD are misdiagnosed as fibromyalgia. And there is no known cure for RSD. And in fact, most Western medical doctors are baffled by its pure existence. All they know is there's some kind of trauma that happens to the body. That could be something as simple as breaking a wrist, spraining an ankle, a car wreck, or whatever. But pain seems to be multiplied after that particular event. And what happens is it starts to spread, and it can move, and it can transfer through the body. And these people are totally debilitated. And it's perfectly explainable through the meridians of Chinese medicine. So for all of these people, for these rare diseases, I'm not saying that Western medicine is not good. What I'm saying is, if you got something and nobody can explain it, think outside the box. And that's what Chinese medicine enables you to do. Einstein said, you cannot solve a problem with the same mind that created it. So in fact, if there is no solution coming out of what the medical profession, the Western medical profession, is offering you, then look outside the box. Look for the alternative methods. And that's where Chinese medicine comes in. It looks at the body totally differently. It looks at it energetically. So that's very, very important. Not to give up hope, but to think that there is another solution. And that's what medical qigong can do for you. Okay? Now, I must also explain something to you, because in our society, there is an enormous amount of proliferation of videotapes and learning courses and all kinds of things. The medical qigong that I do, that I was taught, is through a Taoist priest tradition. It stems back, I'm a disciple of a priest right now who goes back 88 generations, where his family passed on the teachings of Chinese medicine too. And so when we use this, many times it's not the misconstrued kinds of qigong exercises from bad interpretation between Chinese to English that's offered out there. So if it doesn't work, medical qigong, it's not the medical qigong's fault. It's probably the instruction that was slightly off-center. And it's probably not the instructor's fault, because that's the way he was taught. And it's like many things. As a martial artist, I can attest to that. You teach one student, and then that student teaches another student, and by the time it gets to the third, fourth student, it's not nowhere near what you originally taught the first one. So many times, it just kind of gets misconstrued. But medical qigong is a very, very powerful modality. And I'll explain it to you in possibly a different term that you ever heard before. And perhaps this may be something where your Western-trained mind can relate. Have you ever heard of the concept of pH? pH, potential hydrogen, is what it stands for, is a concept where the internal body fluids, the internal milieu of the body, the fluids that flow freely through the body, that intercoagulate with the blood. Your lymphatic system obviously intercoagulates through the blood in the capillary beds. So they're all kind of playing with each other in this soup that you call your body. Now, if your pH, which basically is a measurement of acid to alkaline, and it's a continuum, if your pH, which should be in the blood 7.34 to 7.4, varies by as much as 1. In other words, if your pH goes down to 6 in the blood, you could die. So obviously, this is kind of an important thing for the body to manage. What happens, and what I've found in people who have chronic pain, is the fact that people have altered pH states. Classically acidic because of our Western lifestyle, but sometimes they're also in alkalosis as well. But it's usually acidic. Nonetheless, and we usually use a couple modalities to test, either urine samples on the strips or saliva samples. And when they start to vary too far from where they should be, the internal milieu is compromised and has to go through an enormous fight, the blood does, to stabilize itself. So it expends all its energy trying to balance out that internal milieu to bring it and regulate it back up to 7.34 or 7.4. And it expends enormous resources doing so. Well, what happens is there's a lot of supplements out there, there's diets and so forth. Here's the kicker. There's only two ways that you can regulate your pH. One is through diet intervention. Two is by breathing. And by far, breathing is the most critical, because if I cause you to hyperventilate, you have instantaneously changed your pH. Therefore, when I treat people with panic disorder, obsessive compulsive disorder, panic attacks, all those types of things, I see a classic pattern, not only in their pulses, but not only in their breathing patterns, but also in how they conduct themselves through their day and how they respond emotionally to different things. Because in the Taoist medicine tradition that I study, we don't just look at the physical body. We look at the physical body, we look at the emotional body, and we look at the spiritual body. And like any other course of balance of yin and yang, if one of those is altered too far, then the others have to compensate. Therefore, the body is not in balance. So I speak of what is called the triune nature of man. It's threefold. It basically is comprised of your physical manifestations, whether that be physical, and that's usually when we think something's wrong. But it can also be emotional, and it can also be spiritual. And nowhere does that come more into effect than when we start to watch cancer patients. And the very people who have stage 4 cancer, but have a strong will to live, an indomitable spirit, are the ones that usually are the ones that make it. The people who give up are the usually ones to go. And they've done studies with prayer and very other different kinds of modalities to actually accentuate that point. And that's what Larry Dossey and a few others have dedicated their lives to, is to proving that point that there is a link. But you don't have to prove it to me. Remember my history. I understand that there is an intrinsicable link between those three. And you have to chart, when you look at a client, exactly what is going on between all three to truly get that person well. Otherwise, all you do is apply a patch, and they're basically going to be back with maybe that same symptom, or it's going to manifest another way. So, medical qigong, through its breathing techniques, through its exercise of opening and closing the meridians of the body. And the meridians are like little rivers and pathways in the body. It is said that the heavens have constellations. The earth has rivers. Us humans have the channels or the meridians. So everything has its pathway. Everything has its chartable mechanism. And that was actually by a Taoist text that was written thousands of years ago. So there is a way to plot what is going on in the body. And let me explain this a different way. If one of those meridians is blocked, and let's take the analogy of a stream, and this stream is equivalent to the life force flowing in your body, the very thing that gives you substance. Now we take that stream and we dam it up. What would happen if we dammed up that stream with, say, a log, and debris started to back behind that log? What's going to happen to the water flow? It's going to stop. Well, that's classically when we say we start to have symptomology or pain or something gone awry in the body that we run to the doctor for, or we need a pill for, or we go to one of the drug stores for. It's because a meridian, a channel, has been blocked or is out of balance in some way. And let's take that analogy of rivers and say that those rivers then run into lakes. And those lakes would be analogous to your liver, your kidney, your spleen, your heart. And let's say that there is the other side of the coin. Let's say that there is an enormous amount of water rushing in on that river, and it's causing that lake to fill up above and beyond its boundaries. What happens then? What happens to the ecosystem within that lake? Things start to die, don't they? The very fish within that lake start to die. So either not enough or too much can be just as damaging. And in Chinese medicine, specifically medical qigong, we try to correct these imbalances so that in fact the body becomes balanced again in its flow. And we try to use exercises specific to the condition. Just like if you had to go through physical therapy and rehabilitation, they would give you specific exercises for a rotator cuff injury, a lumbar injury, a knee replacement, a hip replacement. Medical qigong is much the same way. It's very specific. It's very to the point. Okay? So I think that this has applications to a lot of us, and we allow the body to kind of tell us what is going on. Now, here's the other thing. I want you to do a simple experiment for me. And I want you to test your own breathing patterns, which will be indicative, possibly, of your own pH. I want you to take one hand and place it on your chest. Maybe some of you have done this before. And one hand on your abdomen, your lower abdomen, near your bladder. And I just want you to sit there for a moment or two, and I just want you to breathe normally. And I want you to tune in, and I want you to feel. What part of your body is moving, or what part of the body is moving most, and then in what order? And once you have this information, let me give you some feedback on what you're feeling. Being in a relaxed state right now, there should be slight movement. Hopefully you're not nervous or scared or wound up, but if you are in a relaxed state, there should be slight movement of the abdominal and then the chest. Very slight. Now, when you go to stand up and you go up the steps, this is going to come out a little more, and this is going to come out a little bit more, and then it's going to reverse. However, classical American posture, classical American habits in dealing with stress, driving, working in cubicles, talking on the phone, those kinds of activities lend to a thoracic breather. In other words, these muscles in here, the intercostals and things that actually allow your rib cage to move, become very overworked, constricted, and tired. Most people breathe with their chest. And a little bit about anatomy and physiology, the richest supply of blood is not up here in the thoracic cavity, but more down here in the lower lobes of the lungs that extend the whole way to the clavicles, like a teardrop. So if you're only breathing down here, how are you oxygenating your body? Or are you oxygenating it enough? And if so, if you're not oxygenating it, you're altering your pH and you're changing the internal milieu of your own body. So no matter what you eat, what you drink, and your lifestyle, your body constantly has to adapt and make changes. So if you haven't yet, what I want you to do is I want you to learn to breathe with your stomach and also your back, because your back should move. As well, because the whole process works like a bellows. And if you're only moving your front, which a lot of people do in meditation and different kinds of yoga and so forth, it's not enough. There is a half of the ability to bring in oxygen being lost with every breath. Therefore, you should be like a bellow and fill up the drum down low and then let it spread to the top. Almost like a pyramid. And if you're breathing in that mannerism, then you are truly balancing your pH and your internal milieu. And whatever you are doing or whatever you are doing in your lifestyle, it's only going to augment it. It's only going to make it better. And if you have a particular disease, then you want to pay extreme attention to this because it's going to affect the disease process. Think of your body's resources as little armies. And if you start to spread your armies in so many different directions, in so many different ways, how can the armies be effective fighting off pathogens in the body? They can't. You spread the troops out, they don't become as effective. So if you're already fighting the internal milieu of the body all over systemically, and then you get a bug, a cold, a flu virus, whatever comes about, what is your chances of fending that off? Not as great. Not as great. Why? You already got warfare going on throughout your body. So, it only helps us insofar as our immune system response, and only helps us to augment whatever disease pattern we're fighting. And the other thing that it does is it takes the stress response away. Now, I learned back in pre-med, long ago from my psychology professor, that many diseases lay dormant within the body until something comes along like a catalyst, just sends it over the top, and then all at once the disease manifests itself. Stress is that catalyst. And that's why even medical doctors now are warning you about, and what do they say? Very general terms, reduce your stress. But did they tell you how? No. They don't go that far. They just reduce your stress. Well, to some person, that may mean go getting a fifth of bourbon and sitting back and chilling out. And to other people, that may mean, well, I'll just have an extra couple cigarettes, because that's what a lot of people do to chill out. Or that could be something else to somebody. Everybody is different. There's no specific guidelines. I'm here to tell you today that medical qigong is one of the modalities that everybody that has a healthcare concern and anybody who doesn't want to develop healthcare concerns should be doing every single day as part of their daily ritual. If you care about your body, and obviously you do, otherwise you wouldn't be here today. But it's something that is as basic staple as eating correctly, drinking clean water, getting enough rest, and you should be doing some form of qigong for health. And then if you have a specific problem, perhaps you may seek out a Chinese practitioner, maybe in herbals, but possibly in medical qigong as well, to kind of, as I say, jumpstart the battery, get you going in the right direction, and then allow you to continue. After all, you have to take responsibility for this journey. It is not the person, the practitioner, giving you everything you need and you doing nothing. Medical qigong is very, very indicative to the fact that it assumes from the word go that the patient is going to be very, very active in their own healthcare. Otherwise, it won't work. Well, let me rescind that. Otherwise, it won't last. And the person is just going to go back to square one again. So this form of self-health care was known in China thousands and thousands of years ago. And I see it as one of my jobs to actually spread this around, to let more people know about this, because it's portable. And once you have the knowledge, you can do it anywhere, any place, anytime. If you're convalescent, you can do it in a chair. If you're in a bed, you can do it in bed. It doesn't require equipment like Pilates, or you don't have to go to the gym and have weights. You can do it anywhere. What helps is if you have a nice, serene setting. Doing medical qigong at the beach is one of the most extraordinary experiences that you can ever have. Doing it in the mountains, doing it in a flower garden that you planted, is one of the most self-healing things that you could ever do for your body. And if you ever do that on a consistent basis, you are going to be so much more balanced, centered, and regulated in your pH than anyone can ever possibly imagine. Okay? What I would like to do is I'd like to teach you a simple medical qigong exercise. For those of you who have never done this, we're going to take you very simply through this. Now, if you want to stand up, you can. If you want to stay seated, you can. It's that easy. I want you to take what you learned today about your breathing, and I want you to incorporate this into the actual exercise itself. Now, the most important thing about qigong is to feel. You must feel what you're doing. It's not just a matter of doing mechanically what you see me doing. You have to feel what is going on in your body. Doesn't that make sense? Of course. So let's go ahead and do this. If you would, stand up for me, please. And all I want you to do, I hope you all can see me because some of you are rather tall and I'm kind of short. What you want to do, and we're just going to go through the mechanics first, and then I'm going to take you through the visualization. And you're going to be amazed at how easy this is. You're going, what? That's it? Here we go. All I want you to do is bend your knees, take your pelvis, and drop it slightly so that you start to feel the weight on the thighs and you feel your heels root into the earth, as we call it. Now, you also feel a gentle stretch on your lumbar spine. And if you've been sitting all day or driving or whatever, it should feel good because that area doesn't get stretched that much this way. Now, what I want you to do is take an inhale. Bring the arms up like you're going to give somebody a big hug. Drop your shoulders down and exhale like a bellow and compress your chest and bring the hands forward. Inhale again. Like a bellow, opening up, stretching all these muscles in here. Inhales, make this swell now. Relax the shoulders. Everything should be relaxed. There should be no tension in your body. The arms should hang right like this. And as you inhale, relax the shoulders down, relax the elbows, relax the wrists, and exhale. And then back to what we call Wu Qi, or the beginning. Okay, that is an exercise in Qigong. Is it hard? Not really. Now, classically what we would do is we would do prescriptions of these, 36 repetitions. And what you will notice is you will start to feel increased circulation in your body is one thing. You'll start to generate heat. You may even start to perspire off of this very slow, gentle movement, because you know what? It's pumping energy through your channels. Circulation is going on. You're actually running the chi through the pipes, so to speak, at an enormous rate. Now, we're going to do the same thing again, and I want to give you a visualization to go with this. Because you have activated your body, now I want you to activate your mind. That's the critical, important part. What I want you to do is just envision this. Pretend that your hands are sponges, and I want you to pretend that the chi, or the energy of the earth, is water. And you start to draw the chi through the hands, bring it into the arms and into the chest, and swirl. And then I want you to close the bellows. And anything that you swirled that is negative, anything that was dirty, anything that was diseased, just like you swirl water in a glass to cleanse it, you now purge via the breath. So the inhalation is acquiring pure energy. The exhalation is purging anything that is negative, anything that is impure, anything from tuberculosis to tumors to anything in your lungs. If you were a cigarette smoker, purging out all of that debris, disease, get it out. And then bring yourself down to center. This should feel good to you. There should be no strain on your neck. There should be no strain on your muscles. It should be peaceful. It should be rejuvenating. And I guarantee if you would just do that one exercise in the morning, oxygenate your body before you start your day, you are going to have a much better day. If you do this before you go to bed at night, because you oxygenate your body, how many of you possibly know somebody with sleep apnea? If you oxygenate your body and you change your pH before you go to bed, you are going to sleep better. Simple. And everything that follows the Tao, or the way, is simple. It's not supposed to be complex. We like to make things complex because then we think they're special and they work better. Simple works best, always. Look, it's the simplicity in nature. It always follows form and function. Form and function.
This has been a talk by Dr. Ted Sibbick. You can find out more about Dr. Sibbick at Inner Strength Incorporated, inner-strength.com. We also invite you to find out more about Qigong at the Qigong Institute website, qigonginstitute.org. You can spell all that out, or you can go to Google and type Qigong, Qigong, and the Qigong Institute is right towards the top.